Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good, man. I feel like I just talked to you.
Yeah, we're busting out a couple of episodes this week. I am going to be out of town on vacation, so we may be a week or two without an episode, but we're always glad to talk Dynasty, and we'll do that tonight.
Yeah, we got the startup series going, and it's getting rave reviews from the last couple of guests, so I'm pretty excited to keep it rolling.
Yeah, definitely. A couple episodes ago, we had Chad Parsons, who talked about the UTH way and favoring youth. We had Jacob Rickrode, who builds his teams a little bit differently, building around veterans and established players. Yeah, a lot differently, actually. And tonight,
I wanted to put more holes in his theory, but I had a hard time doing it. He knew his stuff.
Well, it just goes back to that idea that there, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, or more than one way to win a championship, and that's obviously has worked for Jacob. Chad's way has worked for him, and that's actually a similar strategy to mine, which, you know, I've won a couple of titles as well. So there's no right or wrong way to play Dynasty as long as you're winning. But our guest tonight has kind of a mixture of those two strategies, so I'm really excited to talk to him. We've got Kevin O'Brien, one of my coworkers over at DLF. You might know Kevin on Twitter as the FF Engineer. Kevin, how's it going tonight?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We're glad to have you, and we'll jump right in. Just kind of give us an overview of your Dynasty philosophy or your Dynasty startup philosophy, Kevin.
Yeah, in general, I try to get a blend. I want to mix my teams. I want to combine both youth and older veteran. It's an old thing that I used to learn in redraft. You know, just draft good players has really been my focus. And then I try to blend my age and mix it in there.
Yeah, I think that's something I've heard Sigmund Bloom say quite a bit is just, you know, draft the right player, draft the talented player. And, you know, sometimes that sounds too easy to be true, but if you're drafting talented players, that's going to work.
Yeah, and so when I have that philosophy, it's always important to focus on what players you're drafting, but as well I balance. So a lot of people try to avoid, you know, like UTH way, they try to avoid older players completely, and then they all put all their eggs in the basket that the productive struggle that you talk about. You try to load up on all those young players and then have them create this dynasty that's for a long time. And then the opposite end of that spectrum is Jacob, where he basically says, don't give me any of those young guys, and he hardly ever likes to draft any rookies. But yet he's successful at his way too. Mine is not so much as, you know, I'm into rookies just as the next guy. I play in Devy Leagues. Even Super Bowl week, I'm researching the rookies that are coming up, right? I want to get a bit of information on draft breakdown. I'm looking at those rookies. I'm evaluating who's up. What does that pool look like for this year? And I want to pick my sweet spots. I'm pretty hit hard on Twitter that I really like Will Fuller. One of the few that are out there that really like him. This is a first-round NFL talent that I can get in the second round. So you're telling me I can trade away my first-round pick for an older veteran, and then I'll get my rookie that's a first-round talent in the early second of the rookie-round picks. So I leverage those kind of strategies. I look for where I can leverage those players and blend them with older and blend them with younger.
So you're saying it's not necessarily old or young that you even focus on, but just, again, drafting those right players and relying on the work that you've put into your pre-draft process. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. And, you know, I listened, actually went back and listened a couple times to the Chad episode and to the Jacobs episode, and I heard kind of, you know, Matt pointed out, Jacob, you're really good at drafting these veteran players, but that, you know, you guys are focused more on drafting those rookies and getting the younger players and drafting those well. I don't kind of punt either or. I want to draft well in both arenas. I really want to draft the right rookies, and I want to draft the right veterans.
You know, I think that's a really good point. And the more that we've done these, I guess it's more for Ryan. You know, this is kind of bigger picture. We've had all these different guys with all these different philosophies, and like you said, Ryan, there are a lot of ways to skin a cat. There's a lot of ways to win a league. There's a lot of ways to build a dynasty. But it comes down to the same thing. I mean, if you pick bad guys, it doesn't matter what your philosophy is. I mean, when I was with the Browns, Butch Davis could have been the best coach in the world, but we didn't have any good players.
I mean, it's, yeah, absolutely.
It's the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's.
Well, you hear a lot about, you know, if you're active on Twitter, you hear a lot about, like, film versus metrics, that part of the community. And, you know, there's, I guess, some radicals on each side of that who want to state their case and defend their side. But I think most people are stuck somewhere in the middle, that they get some information and some knowledge from both of those areas. And it's probably true in this debate as well, young players versus veterans. A few people want to defend their side that, you know, teams should be built around youth, and a few are on the other side building around veterans and ignoring youth almost completely. But in the end, I think most people, Kevin, probably are where you are, in the middle somewhere, and trying to hit the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. And, you know, often on Twitter I see these debates where people argue, no way you can have a team full of Dez and Jordy. Oh, no, no way we're going to go all youth. And they're kind of arguing back and forth. And I step back and go, how about I get Antonio Brown from your argument and I get Sammy Watkins from your argument, and I get those both of my teams? I mean, I'm in 17 leagues, and I can tell you I got as many stacks of Antonio Brown, Sammy Watkins, Devontae Parker, Keenan Allen as the next guy. I want all of them. Why would I choose one over the other or anything like that? And this trade-off, who stepped up and said I had to compromise? I quite missed that memo. You know, I don't really get that idea. Who told me I had to punt all my Antonio Browns to get Devontae Parker? Last year I did a Fake Goods Pod Dynasty Startup. It was our first year. And I started the draft with Demaryius Thomas. I then paired him with Sammy Watkins, and then I got Keenan Allen in the third round. I later traded DT and a first, my future first, for Antonio Brown, because I wanted to uptake DT into Antonio Brown. So I got Antonio Brown, I got Keenan Allen, and I got Sammy Watkins. I won the championship in the first year. So now you'd say, hey, you traded your first-round pick. I still have my 2017 first-round pick. I won the championship last year, and I'm going into this year with an aging Antonio Brown, who I think is Jerry Rice, who can get the next 10 years, so I don't even think he's old. But besides that point, I still got Keenan Allen and Sammy Watkins. So there's really two great cornerstone players that I'm going to go in the future with. So, yeah, I didn't have a first-round rookie for this class, which I did my research and I didn't really like. So I think, you know, my team is still on the young side with those two core players.
That's a great example of how you can mesh and kind of get that best of both worlds. You mentioned playing in, I think you said, 17 dynasty leagues. So I'm assuming with so much experience, your strategy has changed somewhat over your time playing dynasty. How has it evolved?
Yeah, it's evolved quite a bit, actually. So a couple people have asked me a question. What are your first teams look like? And I went back a couple weeks ago and I looked back at my first team, and I was like trying to close the screen as fast as I could, right? Because I went back to that draft and it was just horrible. So miserable. I was this, you know, I played redraft for maybe 15 years or so since I was a teenager. And I looked into Dynasty and I said, oh my God, Adrian Peterson, this old running back who's like prime great running back, is available in the second or third round of a dynasty startup. No way I could grab that guy. So, like, my first team was 4 years ago, I think, and I got my first three picks were MJD, Adrian Peterson, and Matt Forte, and all aging running backs, right? I would not do this today at all, right? And that team is so evolved from what it is today. And that team, even though I drafted poorly and it's 3 or 4 years out now, I was still in the Super Bowl last year. So, it's evolved a ton. And, you know, I a couple years back, somebody told me this book to read. It's called Borrowing Brilliance. And it's actually a business model book, but it basically tells you that nobody has a pure, true idea from their own. all the ideas you have are built from people that you've interacted with in the past that open new doors for you to form your own opinions. And for me, that's exactly what I love doing. And something that I've taken on for DLF is this Twitter observations article. And in the Twitter observations article, I pull tweets from anywhere I can find them, any good information, somebody who's tweeting out good information, stats, philosophy, strategy, whatever it might be. And I really borrow all of these ideas, and I put them into my own basket and form my own. And if that's, hey, somebody really likes this rookie, I'll find out what he has to say about him. I'll take in that knowledge, and then I'll also look at, oh, you know, who likes this older wide receiver? You know, some people have this argument. I've done a lot of reading. Antonio Brown really could be the next Jerry Rice. If you look at Jerry Rice's 10 years after his age 27-year season, phenomenal. Just unbelievable, the run that he had all the way up to his late 30s. So is Antonio Brown going to be a Hall of Fame-type player? It's possible. Now, maybe somebody like Calvin Johnson didn't go past 30 very far. So you still have to kind of navigate that in the old group, but you also have to navigate in the young group. Is it Kevin White? Is it Devontae Parker? Is it Sammy Watkins? Who do you want to focus on? So I take the ideas from everybody, and I try to weed all that out and just build the best team I can.
But isn't your dilemma, and I think it, I'm not being hard on you, but I mean, we're sitting here, and it's easy to say that as we chat, but isn't really the dilemma that you kind of have to sit on the fence that way, though? You know, like, yeah, I want to win right now, and everybody does, of course, but I'm also thinking about the future. You know, should I take Frank Gore, or should I take Devontae Adams? You know, I mean, I would think you have some very difficult decisions, draft, trade-wise, you know, really have to get the flow of that team. If you have 17 teams, and boy, these five are going really well, I'm going to throw my third-round pick next year for Frank Gore or something along those lines.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, anything that you're successful at, it's hard, right? So I never try to say this is easy, and I've made a ton of mistakes along the way, right?
Sure.
And last year, I took on five orphans this year. So last year, I had 12 teams drafting this way and rebuilding and taking on orphans and doing this. I had 12 teams last year in Dynasty. I made 8 Super Bowls last year out of those 12. I made the playoffs and a bunch of other, and a couple other, like a kitchen sink one team that, you know, I took on just to get into the league with Ryan before it was anybody special, right? and just trying to get into a league with Ryan. Right? So anyway, I've been successful with it. And it kind of occurred to me after the fact, people would ask me just what you said, Matt, is, well, how does that work, right? Aren't you conflicted with yourself? Don't you have, you know, people almost ask me if it's as if being in a co-ownership with a dynasty team, right? You have one guy that, one part of me on one shoulder is say, hey, go young with those rookies. You got to get a little bit younger. And you got the other side of my shoulder saying, hey, we need to win now. We need to reap our money. And you're right. There is some conflicts. And, you know, I wrote up this article on DLF to try to articulate my point, and what I found was I really looked back at how I built those teams and how was I successful, and I found that there's a pattern. So I have a 401k type strategy, and what this 401k type strategy is that depending on your willingness to take on risk, right? So we all have 401ks, we all have some kind of retirement account that we want to plan for. You have to plan for, you know, you want mid cap, you want low cap, you know, small cap, do you want your large cap? For me, I go 50% like mid cap, so I want the middle of the road, the 26-year-old, 27-year-old, 28-year-old receivers that are really productive. But then I carve out 25% of my roster for prospects, for Will Fuller, Devontae Parker, and I got a few of those. And then I got 25% of my roster that can be Marshawn Lynch, that can be Jordy Nelson, that can be Brandon Marshall. And in all of those players that you select have to be important, right? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to take a ton of old guys, or I'm going to take a ton of young guys, or I'm going to take a ton of middle average Crabtree, Macklin type players. And you have to kind of build your roster that way. So, for instance, one of the draft strategies I hear, like you guys were asking, in a startup draft, you're asking Jacob, and he said, you know, his first two players that he tries to target were like DT and AJ Green. those are two that I would never pair early on. Like I gave the example of my fake goods pod dynasty team that I won the title last year. I did Demaryius Thomas and I did Keenan Allen with Sammy Watkins. So those are the kind of pairings that I try to match up. And I don't go bang bang like Kevin White and Devontae Parker really early on, or I don't try to do like a really young guy with a really young guy, and then I got that youth risk that, or where I have to punt 1 year or something like that. So I do create those balances.
So unlike me, your roster doesn't look like Kevin White, Perryman, Green, Beckham, and who is the other one you mentioned there that's high risk? You know, that's another young high risk guy.
So say Devontae Parker.
Yeah, right.
Like that, you know, right. So
my roster looks like that.
So I can take on age, but I won't go too far with it, right? So just like when I'm building my 401k, I don't want all small cap. I don't want all large cap. I do want some. I'm a little bit more risk adverse, but I'm not. I don't want to be so conservative that I don't have any young guys, right? So I don't want zero of all the guys you just listed. I want some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. Why am I going to let you get all the good players, right? All those young players that can rise up. And then at the same time, I don't want all of the old guys that I have to, you know, win for the first 2 years and then in year three, figure it out, so to speak, right? I don't want to have to rebuild and then have to re-scream and say, well, I have no rookie picks, I have no young guys, I just had Jordy Nelson, Brandon Marshall, Forte, and Charles all just fall off the cliff, right? So I kind of want to pair those guys, and as like the fake goods pod that I just won the title, I had Marshawn Lynch. So he's retired. Am I afraid of that? No. I have Devontae Freeman and I have Deion Lewis. I have Keenan Allen. I have Devontae Parker. I have those guys on my roster. Mm-hmm. I will have Greg Olsen. I will have, you know, a couple other older guys, Lynch that just fell off. So, you know, I try to get that mold going where I can balance my roster out.
So, Kevin, you mentioned this 401k kind of mentality as you're building a team. Do you find yourself carrying that over in, I guess, as the leagues age and if a league is 3 or 4 or 5 years old, do you carry that forward to that point as far as do you consider that when you're making moves or acquiring draft picks, for example?
Yes. So with the applying my 401k strategy is basically that the kind of part of it that I have to add in there is that I want that my small cap guys that I refer to as my small cap players, like Devontae Parker and things like that, it's important for me to hit on those because they then, as they grow up and get 2-3 years in the league, they become the players that are going to move into my core. So say I have 50% of my core roster that I rely on to compete. I want and need the Keenan Allens to replace my Antonio Brown. And then Antonio Brown moves into what I would consider my large cap players where they're steady, reliable, but they may fall off the cliff like Lynch did for me last year. He you know, I'm not SOL just because Lynch retired. I'm not SOL just because Calvin retired, because I have Antonio Brown, which is now going into that section of my roster, and I've got Keenan Allen and Sammy Watkins moving into that middle of my roster where they're a little bit older, say when they get to be 26, 27. And then I'm backfilling that with, you know, guys I like Will Fuller or Devontae Parker. They're my younger crowd. So as my as the years go by, it's a blend, right? I mean, I use this in one of my articles. I'm a big Patriots fan. I've never, ever once heard Bill Belichick say, all right, guys, Tom Brady's getting a little old. We're going to trade him and let Garoppolo just run with it. And we're going to punt this year so we can get really high draft picks. I apply that to my fantasy teams. I want to go all the time, and I'm still going to draft well. He doesn't punt drafts. He's still going to draft well. He's going to get his draft picks. He's going to get his rookies. He's going to build his defense. He's going to do all the things he wants to do. So I really want to move and blend my team as they age and backfill as it goes.
So we kind of mentioned the orphan team situation. I mean, a lot of people come into a dynasty league via an orphan team. And for people who don't understand, that's a team that's abandoned or an owner that wants out, as opposed to a startup draft. I mean, a lot of times that's how you gain your team. And 99% of the time, the team is garbage, and it's old, and it's beat up, and there's a reason that owner wanted out. Or you can have a dispersal draft. But let's say, hypothetically, you take over a team that has an asset or two, but it's not very good. You know you're not going to win right away. I mean, when I take over an orphan, what I do almost 100% of the time is I pick out – there's a handful of guys that I look at right away and say, this guy can't be on my team. I got to get rid of him. And I know it's bad business, but I probably trade him too low. I trade him 80 cents on the dollar. They just have to be off my team. I don't want that guy because I want my guys. And from an orphan team, I'm all about youth, even more so than any other. I mean, even in an orphan situation that you aren't dealt as many cards as your league mates, are you still taking this approach?
It kind of depends on the state of the roster. So I took over, this was a salary cap league, but 2 years ago, two off seasons ago, or last off season, I took over a team with Jared Behar, helps run the league. Tim Stafford's in it. It's a pretty good league. I really like it. It's a salary cap league. And it was finished 11th out of 12. So it was bottom of the barrel, wasn't good. The guy gave up on it. But I looked at the players, and I said to myself, you know, he's got Watkins, he's got Julio Jones, he's paying way too much money on Cam Newton, was $36 out of $250. He had Stephen Ridley at a high contract. He had a lot of high contracts, and he probably felt stuck, right? And like you said, it was probably more of a struggle for him than it was how to rebuild it. And sort of what you said, a lot of these people get stuck up in this mentality that no matter what situation you're in, you have to lose a little bit, right? You have to give up a little bit. I don't want this player. I don't believe in this player. He's not somebody I would take on. I just get what you can for him, and you want to exit, right? You just – and I'm not so much tied into squeezing value, and I liked how you phrased what you said is clean my roster. Let's strip it down to the rims and build it back up, right? I do like that approach, but it really kind of depends on what I'm left with. So with this salary cap league, I stripped it down. I actually cut Newton outright, took the penalty. It was $36. It was too much of a percentage of a contract. I knew in free agency I could pick up Carson Palmer or whatever. It's one QB league. Just get what I could get. I had Carlos Hyde. I traded him for the 1.03. So I had the 1.02. I had the 1.03. I took Parker, and I ended up taking Gurley. And then I had already had Julio Jones. I already had Sammy Watkins. I got Jordan Reed for a dollar off the waiver wire because nobody thought he was any good, and I just, hey, let's pick him up. Long story short, I finished middle of the road, like 7-6, squeezed into the playoffs, and I won the title. So $50 league, I won $300, pays for the next 5 or 6 years.
Sure.
So I don't like giving up. You know, so in a situation where you look at the players and you're kind of like, it was an 11th place team, but it looked like more of a mismanaged team to me. So I was like, I think I can work this, right? And I pushed forward, went middle of the road, won a title. Now, on the other side of it, similar to what you're saying, there's some orphans like Ryan, you could probably roll your eyes at me, but this kitchen sink league that I took over a couple years ago, it was bad. It was like bad, 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 bad. So, I mean, I had to look at it, and I think the couple players I had was a super kitchen sink is a form that some know well, some might not be familiar with. It's super flex, really complicated league. But I had basically my assets were Forte, I had Kaepernick, and I had Derek Carr, and I had nothing else. I mean, bad, bad, really bad team. So that's a case where I agree with you. I had to strip down, get as young as I could, build up as much assets, kind of build my core as best as I can, because as I could trade away these pieces and get the value I need for my core, I knew I could school guys on getting veterans, right? I knew I was going to get some guys that I could probably willing to take on, like if it be like a Darren Sproles or fill in gaps and things like that. So I ended up trading Carr for Cooper. So I did that almost straight up. I gave up Derek Carr, I got Cooper. I made a trade with some Devy money. I gave up a bunch of my Devy money and a few other things, and I got Devontae Parker. So I got my two receivers that I want that are really young. And I made a trade with Ryan. I don't know if you remember, I got killed on Twitter for this trade. back then. So I traded him for Tay, and I got back Kenny Stills and Devontae Freeman. So, Matt, you're probably not as familiar with me, but I was on Devontae Freeman, like, way early last year. Maybe February, I did an article where I thought he was a buy because I thought he was Brian Westbrook. I looked a lot of his tape. I looked at a lot of his film. I studied his numbers. I looked at Brian Westbrook's early numbers from when he was a rookie. He was kind of viewed as a third down back. He wasn't viewed as a primary back. I just thought he was a shifty, gritty, cut-up field kind of player, and I just really liked him. So I did a lot of research on him, and I was all in, man. I got Devontae Freeman on, like, maybe 9 out of my 12 Dynasty teams that I had last year. Cheap, dirt cheap. So I got Devontae Freeman on this kitchen sink league, and I, just like you said, so that team is young. It leans very young. And then I went later, and I was very optimistic. I was a little bit patient, and I was optimistic. I bought Stafford young. I got Cousins off the waiver wire cheap last year. I was optimistic. You know, I didn't overinvest in places where I knew I could find and fill holes, right? So not to go too far on along with it, but basically, yeah, you know, it depends on what the orphan looks like, right? So sure. I gotta make an analysis of what pieces are there for me to work with. What are my strengths, too? I think this is not viewed enough in Dynasty. What are your strengths? Are you good with film? Are you good evaluating rookies? Can you identify that transition to the NFL? You know, that conversion rate of, you know, okay, he's a great college player, but, you know, I also did a post-mortem on DLF of showing currently over the last, you know, how many years, how well are those rookies actually being top 50 startup picks today? And the rate's low. I mean, it's 50. I think it's much lower than people realize. And so you have to know yourself, right? And if you're good building teams that way, then you go all for it. But if you are good identifying veterans or picking up quarterbacks, like, then leverage your talent in that. Be able to fill in your roster with things that you know and evaluate veterans well, like someone like Jacob does. I kind of pride myself in doing both. But
so you mentioned basically having that goal of winning every year, and it which is something you would have in common with Jacob from our last episode. But is that really feasible? And we're not talking about orphans now, but just a team you've built, is it realistic to expect that you can compete every single year? Or are you eventually going to have those down years where you have to maybe not have to rebuild, but at least where you take your lumps? So do you feel that's a reasonable goal or expectation?
I think that's probably realistic. It's not really the viewpoint I take. Maybe, you know, not like I view that as quitter's mentality, I guess. But I think that's probably realistic, that after 3 years I gotta look to reset. But I really try to reset after 1 year. So I'll look at, okay, you know, Dez seems to be aging faster than Antonio Brown is, right? So you got to kind of like watch it as it goes. Even in, you know, this is really getting with a fine tooth comb, but you know, you got to kind of keep an eye on your roster. And I'm a 365 day a year Dynasty player. I'm constantly evaluating my team. I'm constantly seeing where it's going. You know, if I'm too heavy, young or old, and see how it's going. You know, guys like Cobb, I thought Cobb was going to be this great young player, right? So he's one of those guys that you leverage. And for me, I don't have that many young players, so I need my young guys to hit, right? So now that it's a year after and we're kind of all thinking, oh, maybe Cobb isn't really going to grow into, quote-unquote, an Antonio Brown-level player. I need to replace him. I need to, and then I'm kind of moving and jiving with that. You know, is it reasonable to expect that you can win every year? Probably not, but I will. I'm going to try. I'm going to do it because playing redraft so long, I had so many 500 teams that got into playoffs, got hot, and won. If you can win on a weekly basis, I always try. I hate it. I don't know if it's calm or what. I just don't like the quote-unquote productive struggle that you say. You know, you're big on it. You don't give up that first year and try to rebuild. It's just against my personality. I just always want to push, always want to try. So some teams are going to be, you know, top contenders just on paper going into the season, but other ones are going to be middle of the road, and I'm going to make in-season management, or I'm going to make some trades to get me in the right place and push, push, push.
However, I assume you will concede that your way of doing things and these more aggressive ways of doing things that we've, you know, Jacob and your and Jacob's way of approach of doing things, there's less insurance. Like, yeah, I trust myself that I'm going to draft well, and I think we all do. But if you don't, if you had one bad year or back-to-back years of poor talent evaluation and Demaryius Thomas turns into Calvin Johnson and he falls off the planet, or Larry Fitzgerald turns into Steve Smith and he's all of a sudden not worth anything, all of a sudden you're swimming upstream. You know, where I have a lot more cards in the deck, but, you know, the other argument is that I probably have a less chance of winning today.
Yeah, and you know,
I think there's more pressure on you to hit your picks.
I think it goes both ways, you know, to be honest with you. And this is something I hear a lot out of UTH guys and stuff, is that they think that there's a higher percentage of veterans that fall off the edge. And then the other side of the argument is people say there's a lot of rookies that fall off the edge or don't pan out. And to be honest with you, I think you're both right. I think there's a lot of players that do it, that veterans that do fall off the cliff, like Lynch and Calvin and all these other guys, or, you know, but it's just as likely that you could have, you know, players that don't pan out. I mean, first round rookies and by no means guarantees, right? I mean, if you built last year, you kind of, I would imagine if you built a team that was very heavy youth from last year, you're kind of a little reeling a little bit. You got Perriman, you know, you lost him a year. You got White, you lost him a year. You know, so you're kind of reeling like, you know, I hope White's going to really be good. You know, I really want him to be good. Perriman, you're kind of like, I hope so. Melvin Gordon didn't really do what Gurley did, right? Gordon was a top five pick last year. So I think both sides are actually got some truth in it. And I think that's what fuels the debate so hard, is that I really want to coin this, you know, push people to realize mutual exclusivity is you both can be right and you both can be wrong at the same time, right? So you say I don't have insurance, but I would say you don't have insurance either that all of your rookies are going to pick out. And the hope is that you have six or eight of them and three pan out, right? So I think this both sides can say that argument that you don't have insurance.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Although, as bad as Melvin Gordon looks, and I've never been a fan, I own him nowhere, I recommended last year no one to take him, he couldn't have had a worse year, and he's still going pretty high in drafts. You know, like, it takes a long time for these guys to value in terms of what I can trade him for or what he costs in a dynasty world. They really have to screw up pretty bad in their first year or two. Kevin White's value went up, and he didn't play a snap yet. You know, so if you own Matt Forte right now, and he's one of the guys I think is going to hit a wall this year, if he does hit that wall, he's worth zero.
Yeah, and, you know, and I take that. So I listen, actually.
But maybe you used up – I'm sorry to interrupt, but maybe you did use up Matt Forte and got every yard he could have possibly given you.
Yeah, exactly. And Lynch was my example from my fake goods team, is that, you know, I have Dion Lewis, I have Devontae Freeman, I have young players that are stepping up in his role. And I prepared for Lynch to be, you know, Adam Harstad does a lot of good work on this stuff where he thinks it's essentially a flip of the coin where, you know, the next year a player can be gone or here, right? It's not that they necessarily decline in value, is that they can be just gone the next year. Is Calvin Johnson, for instance, Lynch, where you think you got a few more years and you're squeezing it. But for me, I insulate my own self from that, is that Lynch is not a core of my team. Devontae Freeman, Deion Lewis, those are my cores. I have Eddie Lacy, I'll have other players like I do with the receivers. I have Keenan Allen, I have Watkins. That's my core.
But it's sure nice starting him week six when he's healthy.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, and
that's
the
dilemma
I have
sometimes. This time of year, I look at my roster, I'm like, man, I'm loaded with young talent. And then week eight rolls around, and I'm like, man, I don't want to start this guy.
Yeah, and like I said, I really, really, really like the idea of Barmer and Brilliance. I think there's really great strategies that are embedded in each philosophy, and I really do want the best of both worlds. And maybe I'm a little naive, but I, so far at least in the last 4 years or so, I've had really good success blending these philosophies.
So let's move over and talk specifically about the quarterback position. Kevin, you and I have had a lot of Twitter conversations, and we now play in a lot of leagues against each other. So I have a pretty good idea how you value quarterbacks. So just talk a little bit about that, and then specifically how you value quarterbacks even in super flex leagues where they clearly have more value to the average owner.
So just talk straight like snake draft. Not, I won't complicate it with kitchen sink or auction for now. But basically, so one QB leagues, I'm almost like that arrogant guy that's, you know, like I can hit a golf ball with any club you give me. You give me any quarterback, I'm going to stream something that you wouldn't believe. And I've won way too many redraft championships that way, where like I pick people off waiver wires and I start them and I find matchups and I read the best streamers out there that give me the right pick. So I kind of always had that philosophy in redraft, and I took it to 1QB leagues. When I go to Superflex, I definitely place a higher value, but I don't go high. It's more of an offset up, right? So I don't go from the extreme opposite point of view. I just basically say, well, maybe in 1QB leagues, I'd wait for round 10 or 12. But in two QB leagues, my first QB, I won't wait that long, right? I can't. My tiers have just disappeared. So for a super flex league, I move that up to maybe the fourth, fifth, sixth round, where I'm looking at like Tannehill, Stafford, Breeze, somebody like that. And then I'll stream my second quarterback in that super flex spot. So I still want somebody that can approach QB1 type numbers, but a safe floor. So I devalued my QB1. And then I stream my QB2/flex, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think, and Chad mentioned this on his episode, I think a lot of what people do is, you know, if typically in a normal league, maybe wide receiver is viewed as the, you know, the most important or the most valuable position, the position you can build your team around. I think in those super flex or two quarterback leagues, people just switch that over to quarterback, and I know I'm probably one of those that I like to build those teams around the quarterback position, and I've noticed that's not your philosophy. So talk about the success that you've had with streaming. I know you mentioned Kirk Cousins earlier and hitting on some of those guys.
Yeah, so last year I was in some Superflex leagues where I had, I think, like Big Ben was my QB1, and then my second quarterback I like to stream. So I grab guys like Cousins, Fitzpatrick, even year before I grabbed Carson Palmer. There's all these guys that I think, you know, Blaine Gabbert. I think I started Luke McCown. He was back up for Breeze 1 or 2 weeks maybe, and happened to start him against Luck when he had 4 points or something, you know. So I, of course, that just fuels my fire even more, that I'm like, hey, I grabbed Blaine Gabbert off the waiver wire and I started him versus your Luck and beat you, right? So there was actually Kitchen Sink, where I rebuilt that team and I had I was in productive struggle, right? I was no chance I was winning. And I actually started winning because I was beating guys with Luck and Newton with my Cousins and Luke McCown and Josh McCown and Blaine Gabbert. And I'm like, well, this is not going the way I planned. You know, this is like, I didn't want to win these games, right? And I'm starting to win these games. So some of the data that I look at for when I stream quarterbacks is, you know, something I even apply in Dynasty is these championships are actually won week to week. We win week to week. We like to put our paper and put our teams together, but really we want to win week to week. So I look for players that, even if they only start 8 games, what were their points per game? So some data and numbers I ran recently, I did a Blaine Gabbert article for playerprofile.com that posted today, and I ran some point per game numbers, and I looked at 2QB ADP from last year. There were seven guys that finished in the top 24 of QBs that had an ADP that were outside the top 24. So that's a pretty big number for me, and that's a pretty big pool of players. Now, some of those were rookies that ended up being better than we probably perceived that they were going to be. Like Blake Bortles, obviously, is somebody who was young. We didn't really know if he was going to step up into, you know, QB1 or even top five where he finished. But there were also players like Tyrod Taylor, Kirk Cousins, Ryan Fitzpatrick, even Blaine Gabbert. He was actually the QB22 in points per game. So in his 8 games played, he had 17.4 points per game. I can win with that. I can win with that. You know, some people say, oh, you're not going to be able to find that every year. I disagree. I clearly disagree. So I don't want Blaine Gabbert to make QB1. But if that's my QB2, I'm okay starting them there. And it's just kind of this blind confidence that you have after you're doing it for so many years, that starting now on paper, I may have teams where you look at my rosters and say, well, who are you going to start in Superflex? You're going to start a receiver? No way he's going to match quarterback. And then you get into the season and you just find out that there are opportunities for you to stream and get good points out of these players.
It's interesting you brought up Gabbert, and just to kind of go on a tangent, I have an article, a Dynasty article coming out for The Score tomorrow, where a lot of lower tier guys, I picked like 20 names that you can get cheap, and Gabbert was basically at the top of the list. I mean, not to mention, if he's a Chip Kelly quarterback, he's going to put up points. I mean, I just checked in my leagues. I'm in 7 leagues. He's available in 2. I mean, he should never be available right now. He's going to put up points. You can win a dynasty league, a one quarterback dynasty league, with Blaine Gabbert as your quarterback, assuming he wins the job. And in a two quarterback league, he might be a really good number 2.
Exactly. Totally couldn't agree more. And he's free. That's the thing. And, you know, so I kind of took this to the extreme on my KS4 team. So Kitchen Sink 4, I kind of got squeezed out of quarterback a little bit. So I tried to go for like a Stafford-type player for my QB1. And it was an auction. So I kind of got squeezed on money a little bit. And Gabbert's my QB1 right now. So I'm going to have to try to fix that at some point along the way. But luckily, I don't have to fill out a lineup in June, right? So right. I did my startup draft, and I've got 6 receivers that are, you know, Antonio Brown, Sammy Watkins, Keenan Allen, Jordan Matthews, Devontae Parker, and Golden Tate. That's my 6 receivers, and I can start them all along with Blaine Gabbert. And I'll find or trade eventually, or I'll get opportunistic where I find some guy's going to start. You know, and I think a lot of that has to do with I always have my pulse on the teams, right? So there's 25 teams right now that probably are comfortable where they are at quarterback going into the season. There's these 7 teams that I'm always watching. Every single OTA report, every single thing, I'm on them. Who's the number 2 guy? Who's the number 3 guy in practice? Who's getting the more reps? And I'm watching that. Every OTA or every mini camp, every training camp, I'm following it all along the way. And you do definitely find patterns. And I was able to get, you know, Cousins when everyone thought RG3, oh, they gave RG3 all this money. And they said, no way Cousins will start in April, May, June. And then it became the season. And hey, lo and behold, Cousins is not a bad quarterback to have in Superflex right now. You know, Fitzpatrick, Palmer, you can name them right off, Gabbert. You can name all these players off that just they come out of nowhere and they're filling these 7 teams that are iffy at quarterback, right?
In hindsight, the Cousins call, Fitzpatrick call, you know, those look brilliant, obviously. So who's the guy this year? Is it Gabbert? Is that the guy you're banking on, or who else are you watching? Geno Smith, maybe?
Yeah, actually, you know, Hackenberg's so cheap. So I'm doing Hackenberg. I'm kind of loaded up on Hackenberg and Geno Smith. Those 2 guys are dirt cheap just because they think Fitzpatrick is going to win the job. You look at Fitzpatrick's numbers, and there's a reason why they're not wanting to give him money. His production is great. his completion percentage. When, like PFF, they track catchable targets and how, and what their completion percentage is, accounting for drops. He's like 31 out of 32 QBs in the league. Middle of the pack on interceptions, if not maybe top 10 high interception ratio. So his production looks great, but his quarterback numbers don't look so great. So I think the Jets are actually looking at. Yeah, they don't know exactly.
He's not a good player, and I get killed in the media by this one. You know that he had his best year as a pro last year, and I still say it's not good enough. You can't win with that guy. I'm talking real life, not fantasy.
Absolutely.
I get killed for my Fitzpatrick, you know, analysis, and I think this is bearing out exactly what you and I are saying is. The Jets don't even want him that bad.
I agree. And I think they're prepared to either play Geno Smith or Hackenberg. And both are really cheap right now. So I'm picking up guys like Cody Kessler. I don't believe in RG3. I didn't believe in him in Washington. Even if he starts for 6-8 games or something like that, I just don't think he's long for the NFL. So I'm getting whoever's behind him. I'm getting guys like I'm not a big Sanchez believer, you know, Sanchez believer. But if Paxton Lynch is cheap enough, I would get him. I just look around the league. I'm not a big Brock Osweiler fan. I think they gave him a ton of money for Gabbert production. I actually, you know, I put in my article on Gabbert. Their numbers are eerily similar in the 8 games that they both played. So I kind of take some flyers on guys like Savage that's sitting back there in Houston. I'll keep an eye on him, see what he's like. I think O'Brien actually likes him quite a bit. So I'm looking at who's the backup for the Texans. I'm looking up who's the backup for the Browns, the Jets, you know, obviously the 49ers. I'm looking at all these players and seeing who's there. And, you know, and then I have also I try to keep an eye on guys that seem to miss games every year for it, whether they actually do or not. Roethlisberger seems to miss a couple games, 3 games all the time. So I got Landry Jones in a couple places where he can get a start. I like quarterbacks that are with good players. You know, if you give Landry Jones Antonio Brown and Ladarius Green and he's got Le'Veon Bell back there and I'll take my chances for a free guy like that he's going to give me 2 startable weeks. So I got him stashed in deeper rosters. You know, and I want to emphasize, this is easier in deeper leagues. Obviously, right, I can carry this many quarterbacks. You know, if the shallower rosters, it's really
tough.
You're
not keeping Tom Savage in a 25-man league.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, some of the guys I liked before the Wentz was, you know, Chase Daniels is a quarterback I keep my eye on because I think Peterson really likes him. So, you know, this you just got to scan those eerie situations where there are I have these 7 teams identified in the NFL that I don't think they know who they're going to start week 1. So I'm looking, who's that backup? Who can emerge in camp? You know, who's getting some good repertoire with the receivers and things like that.
Chase Daniels is a good one because I assume, and Riley knows better than I do, but I assume Bradford and, of course, Wentz are worth more in the dynasty circles right now than Chase Daniel. But let's say the Bengals quarterback or Seattle's quarterback, whoever, gets hurt in week 2 of the preseason, they trade for Bradford. All of a sudden, Chase Daniel might be the starter there all year. I mean, that's not that hard to find that path of him being the Eagles' starting quarterback this year.
Absolutely. And I think that Bradford relationship with the Eagles is pretty bad. I don't think that's long for the NFL.
Let's get back to some startup draft strategy specifically. So if you're doing a startup draft, Kevin, by the end of the draft, do you have any certain positional breakdown that you try to have? Do you want, you know, do you always want to have 3 quarterbacks or 2 tight ends? I've seen some guys who complete a draft, they may only have 1 quarterback, 1 tight end, and they're not too concerned about that. Where do you fall on that?
So this is something I kind of opened my eyes once I started getting into the 12 to 17 leagues, is that when I hear people answer these questions, I think to myself right away, they ain't in enough different type of leagues because the gambit is really, really spread out. So I don't know if people realize, but FFPC, which runs Dynasty Leagues, they're actually 14-team keepers. They go down to 14 players before their rookie draft. So their free agent draft is pretty deep of free agent pools. That's a keeper league to me. So that's 14 teams. In there, I'll probably only keep in one quarterback on my roster. I'll pick somebody off the waivers for a QB2 just as a backup. So that really impacts my decision to answer that question, right? So
Mike, you can zero?
I have gone to zero where I had, you know, I mentioned that third and log league. I had Newton at a high salary, and I had another quarterback on an expiring contract, and I went to zero, and I said to myself, I know the free agents that I can pick up will be good enough. But yeah, I may go to zero depending on, you know, in a 14 keeper league. I may get pressed. If you're asking me to drop, you know, one of my prospect receivers to keep 14.
Right. If you have other good guys, right.
Goodbye. You know, so I don't really have a per se number. I looked across a lot of my leagues. I think ideally in one QB leagues, I only want to hold two in a typical 20-man roster. A lot of leagues, I think the median I play in are probably 24-man rosters. So I'll carry three if I have to. And then the breakdown of that is important too, right? So my QBs, and even in one QB league, I like to go really, really high, good, high performer like Breeze, and then back him up with like a Ryan Tannehill. If I get those combos, I'm solid just having those two guys. But if I have like Palmer, Romo, and then Garoppolo, I might add a fourth, you know, if I need to, just because I'm really shaky at the two top there. So it kind of depends on who I have, and that kind of dictates. And then also how well I've been able to build up receivers. So I really like having majority of my team loaded with receivers, with between flyers like Willie Snead last year. I'll even hold like a Ted Ginn Jr. because I think I can start him every now and then. So I have a lot of receivers, so that kind of drives me, and I don't really set up limits.
How about trading up or trading down during a dynasty startup? Do you find yourself doing that much, or do you typically stick with the position you have?
You know, I hear a lot of people talk about this, and I really love it when I hear it. When I, you know, Chad Parsons talks about this a lot, about getting the high pick in startups and trading down and getting the value. I wish I was that aggressive. I guess I'm not good at trading in the moment like that when I'm under pressure. So I kind of, you know, if I get like a Kentucky Derby style draft, I'll try to get the late first and early second, and I won't even bother trying to trade really. I just rely on my ability to draft better than most. So I will trade up, and I will trade down in optimistic times. Something that I do like to do is, Chad talks about this a lot, is you've got to have your zones in these drafts. Not enough people do tiers and zones, and that is so important, and I don't think it gets emphasized nearly enough, is you really got to have your group of players. You know, and a lot of people think, oh, who do you want in the first round? Who do you want in the second round? I think I group players. I don't group by rounds. I want two in the top 15. I want four in the top 50. I might want five in the top 75. You know, and then I look at where the zones are in my players, and then if I have a big group, I'll trade down. If that group's getting small and I need somebody, then I'll trade up. And, you know, right now, for instance, a specific example would be fifth and sixth rounds in drafts. As you know, I hate those. I hate those spots because I think people come to a moment of crisis in the fifth round where they say, Edelman? Nah, I don't want to take him in the fifth round. And then you get the other half of the people say, Melvin Gordon in the fifth? Okay, he's the young guy. I kind of want him, but maybe I could wait. And they kind of like reach for their young guys, and they don't want to take their old guys, and it's kind of like this in-between moment, right? And I think fifth and sixth rounds is really where I can pick up my value, because I really can find guys in the seventh or eighth round that I like just as much as the guys in the fifth. And I think Matt or somebody had mentioned this on one of the pods, where I like the sixth round guys better than the fifth round guys, and you can really flip those, right? So where Jacob, you know, he said, oh, I trade my future first and move up in drafts. And many will view me as being more aligned with Jacob's strategy.
Yeah, I thought that's
actually I'll flip the tables on you. I actually take advantage. You know, I don't know if you guys watch Shark Tank, but Kevin O'Leary's on it a lot, and he says, you know, there's only a few moments in life where people forget about how much they want to spend. And in startup drafts, that kind of is the moment for me where I get few guys that want to win now and they're ready to give up their future rookie picks. So I totally take advantage of that. I'll trade my fifth for a future first and an eighth in a heartbeat because I value guys in the eighth just as much as the fifth, you know. So last year I did a high-stakes dynasty league, and I did really well in it. You know, it's a pool of, 400 players. We go to the championship round. It's 120. I finished top five. And in my startup draft, I traded my fifth pick. So in the fifth round, I traded away, and I got two firsts. The guy had already made some trades, and he got some firsts, and he wanted to get extra picks early. So I gave up, you know, my fifth for two firsts, and I ended up getting like an eighth or a ninth. He took Spiller. I got two firsts, and I got Devontae Freeman in the eighth. You know, so, you know, cha-ching, right? So, absolutely. And I can go both ways because of my philosophy of borrowing brilliance from different people. I'll take Chad Parsons' idea of, you know, moving up, getting value, know your zones, and then trading for future firsts, right? I want to acquire those picks. I may not take them, you know. I may leverage those as assets later, but I'm not necessarily about trading away my picks. So trading up, trading down is more about zones, where you are in the draft, getting value, where you value players, and things like that.
To me, it sounds like you have a lot of Belichick, I'm going to zig when everyone zags.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll know whether people overvalue or undervalue, right? So, and I'll know the drafts, right? So I don't, like somebody like Jacob might look at rookie picks and say, oh, they don't hit enough for me, so I won't even evaluate them. So, no, I watch film on every single rookie. I watched draft breakdown between January and the draft. I watched 50 rookies. I watched the film on all of them. I studied all of them. Who do I like? Who do I don't like? Who am I willing to pass on? So I want to know. And then I look at the 2017 picks, and you even hear Chad say those picks are getting overvalued. Where are we, right? Like, what are we doing right here? You know, so even people who like those rookie picks are saying they're overvalued. You know what that is to me? Licking my chops. You know, and I mentioned this on Twitter. I used to trade future first like 3 years ago, right? I traded two first for Antonio Brown after the 1 year he had, and that was money for me. But those were iffy players. You know, sometimes I traded a first for Brandon Marshall or somebody that was like 29 years old, you know. I'm getting Devontae Freeman for a 2017 first in a 16-team league that I think I'm competing. That's an early second-round pick, you know. So if I think I'm competing and I'm at a 110, 111, 112 level where I value my pick, I don't even think people know who they're taking. You get to this 2016 draft, I'll take Fuller 2-3, you can have my first. You know, move me back into the early second. I take Fuller, you take whoever you like in the late first, and I pick up some value. So definitely, I always want to know where the market's valuing these assets.
See, that's the thing I think maybe I agree with you most is, to me, the most important, maybe the two most important things in Dynasty are player evaluation, which we both, all of us agree on. I mean, if you can throw all these philosophies out the window if you don't draft well or pick the right guys. And secondly, I really view it like a stock market. Like, obviously, I lean towards youth very, very heavily. And when people ask me on Twitter, would you rather have this side or this side? Well, I don't know everyone's team, and it depends on your team. And usually I lean towards the youth side, and that's, I have this reputation. But in the end, I'm kind of like you, too, though, that it's all about if the public is valuing the stock at a dollar and I only see it as an 85-cent stock and I own it, I'm selling it every time. I don't care if he's old, young, you know, whatever, or a future pick or whatever. It all just depends on public perception.
Yeah, I actually, and I got brushed back on this, too, is I actually stopped posting my trades. just because the context was overwhelming. You know, it's hard to explain to people what the context of your roster is. You know, was it an orphan on Twitter in less than 140 characters, right? I've made so many trades that got slammed that won me so much money. You know, if I'm building my teams through 140 characters and what people find on a poll, you know, I'm not even talking to you right now. You know, I'm losing money, and I'm, you know, just the guy reading articles, right? So, you have to take everything in context.
So, Kevin, earlier you mentioned an ideal or maybe a typical draft you might do, maybe a veteran wide receiver and a younger wide receiver in the first two rounds. But take us a little bit deeper. I know you've seen June ADP over at DLF. So let's say you're starting with an A.J. Green and a Sammy Watkins in the first two rounds, for example. What are you doing in the third, fourth, fifth round? Take us a little bit deeper into a potential draft for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So for my third pick, if I started with A.J. Green and like a Watkins or something like that, my third round pick that I love, that I get everywhere, and you guys, you know, I hear, you know, Chad Parsons likes him a lot too, is Jordan Matthews. I don't understand what dog he kicked. I mean, this guy is so good. I mean, he you look at his first 2 years and you compare him historically, how well that's been, and people want to assign that to Chip Kelly. Maybe, but it wasn't Aguilar doing that. It was him. I mean, he was doing those plays. And some people don't like the drops, and I think that's a little bit overemphasized, that he had so many drops. He had 9 drops in all those targets. And, Matt Harmon did a great job. He has an article you can try to find on his website there where he talks about the psychology of drops. People saw drops on prime time, and it, you know, Davante Adams is all of a sudden the most drop receiver, right? So I think drops are a little overplayed, that may play into it. But a third round pick, I really like Jordan Matthews. I'll take Kelvin Benjamin. I probably am not taking Corey Coleman that early. I see him creeping at the end of the third a little bit. And at the same token, I'm not taking Jordy Nelson that early either. So Jordan Matthews is a good target for me. If Jarvis Landry slipped in a little bit, I would take him. Those would be my targets in the third.
All right, so you potentially have 3 wide receivers at that point. At what point do you start to target running backs?
So I kind of like this fourth round where I can get Doug Martin or Mark Ingram. The two steady backs, chuggers, a lot of carries, high yardage. I like those guys kind of as my anchor as RB1. So in the fourth round, if I've got those 3 receivers that we've just been talking about, at the fourth is where I probably am looking for a running back. And again, talking about groupings, so I look where the pockets of players are, right? The third, you have a decent-sized pocket of receivers that I like, maybe 3 or 4. But and then looking at the fourth round, I'm looking at Lacy, I'm looking at Doug Martin, I'm looking at Mark Ingram. You know, I'm not a big Hyde fan, but he's there. So if somebody else is looking for a running back in there, you know, he's kind of my shark bait that I think he'll go. So I got 3 running backs right around the time where maybe 1 or 2 other players that are in the draft are looking for running backs. So I kind of like the fourth round for running backs. And really for receiver, I'm not a big fan of Michael Floyd. I'm not a big fan of, say, Julie Edelman that early. You know, maybe Josh Doxson is a target for some people in the fourth, but I don't like rookies that early. I do like rookies, don't get me wrong, but I probably won't take them with my fourth or fifth pick.
And we've already talked about the fifth and the sixth as kind of a no man's land for you. You're probably trading those picks. So go a little bit deeper, maybe into the seventh or eighth round range, and we'll wrap up with this. Who are some guys you like in the 60s, 70s, 80s range of ADP?
Yeah, so this is where I'll start to look at how the draft is going, and if people are grabbing more youth early, I may actually chase a little bit and get some youth. But if it's going a little bit older, then I'll wait on youth. So some of the guys that I like in that round, in that range, would be Devin Funchess, Stephon Diggs. I really like those guys. Funchess, I think he's a great player. I really like that guy for where he's going in drafts. 22 years old. He would be prime kind of receiver that I would put in what I called my prospect group, right? My small cap, you know, high prospect type player, right? And those kind of guys, what they allow me to do personally, the way I think about it is, if I grab a Devin Funchess, he's almost as if he's my rookie. 22 years old, talented receiver, looks like he's progressing well. He's already made the transition to the NFL. And if I get that guy, maybe I can actually trade away my future first, because he is kind of like that first round prospect for me. So he allows me to be able to do that. I generally am not going to go too old here, because I think that there's plenty of players that will keep falling. So Funchess, Diggs, I may reach Melvin Gordon kind of guy right here, Kenneth Dixon. For my RB2, I'd start considering those type of players.
Again, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, Kevin. Before we wrap up, just tell everyone where they can find your work.
I'm at the _FF_engineer. Some people get on me, like Carl gets on me for my underscores, but I got them in there. It looks better, I think, to me. But anyway, the best way to find me is I actually have a blog site that I use, theffengineer.com. And actually something that I do that many analysts don't do, I guess, or contributors to sites, is I actually have a tab on my site that you can get a link to all my leagues. So I list all 17 leagues,
oh, cool.
Links to all my teams. You can go through the, you know, I encourage people to look at the context of my rosters, right? Look at all the flow, look at the rules, look at the lineup settings, you know, the type of leagues that I'm in. So you can look at all my rosters, and I give the team name there, so you can check it out all there. And then obviously I'm at DLF.
Before we call it a night, I want to give away a spot into the prestigious SFB 480. Our buddy Scott Fish is running this massive league, 480 teams. I know he's been putting a ton of work into this. Matt and I are both playing in this. Kevin, are you in the SFB?
Yeah, I'm in it. My third year.
This is my first year. So
awesome. It's so good, man. It takes over Twitter.
It really does. In July, when, you know, I guess training camps are kind of starting to pick up, but there's not a ton of football news going on, it really does take over Twitter, and everybody is talking about the Scott Fish Bowl. He's added, I think last year was 360 teams, so he's added another 120, giving so many people a chance to play in this fun league, and it's almost like anybody who's anybody in the fantasy football world is in this league, and he kindly gave us one spot to give away. We had a lot of people do some great reviews for our podcast, and we appreciate all of those. We did have to choose one. I let my wife choose that at random, and she chose the user Dan McD. Dan McD. So, Dan, if you're listening, hit me up on Twitter, and we'll get you set up with Scott and get you in one of the leagues. I think, Dan, you're actually going to be playing against me in my 12-team league. So out of those 480 teams, they start as 12-team leagues, and they whittle down to a champion eventually, from 480 all the way to one.
I think 240 make the playoffs.
That's
insane.
Know, Scott wow. Scott has come up with so many crazy league ideas over the years, and this is awesome. You know, this is the feather in his cap that has all the fantasy world talking. So Dan McD, hit me up on Twitter, and we'll get you set up. Everyone else, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.